Good morrow, and welcome back to The Realm. I am epic fantasy author J.B. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into The Realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis, and each of them specialize in a different art form. And tonight, I have a fellow speculative fiction scribe on the show, so hang tight. I'll introduce you to him in a minute. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at jbhilliard.com, or go ahead and give me a follow at jbhilliardbooks on Twitter/X, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or you can find me just as JB Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. So as we reach our witching hour here, I want to thank our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine. And if you haven't checked it out, www.alteredrealitymag.com takes you to their e-magazine, which is an e-magazine that focuses on a variety of speculative fiction and poetry. So if you're a fan of sci-fi, or you like fantasy adventure, or you like to read about monsters and the gothic and dystopian novels about the future, that's the place to go. Check it out. There are hundreds of authors and poets on there, all form a real nice community. They have about 180,000 views a year. So go check it out. Again, alteredrealitymag.com. And today we'll be chronicling the adventures of fellow speculative fiction scribe Dharma here. And Dharma is an author. He's also an entrepreneur. And the guy's got many, many talents, which we're going to get into tonight. So Dharma, well met and welcome to The Realm.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's our pleasure. And tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, what you write, and where they might be able to find you.
Well, I write science fiction and fantasy, and my books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and several other platforms I can remember right now. I think they're even in libraries.
Well, that's a big place for them to be. I always like it when I go into a library and can find my books, too. So let's dive right in, and tell us a little bit about your book. The one that you sent me that I've started to do is Captain Nemo. And, you know, I think what you've done here is you've really tried to put a very familiar character and series of novels and put your own creative spin on it. So tell us a little bit about it and why you thought this was an idea which inspired you. What inspired you to take this step?
Jules Verne was the first science fiction writer that I ever read. And over the years, as I would periodically revisit 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, I always felt that there was a huge backstory that was very interesting that nobody had told it yet. And so that's how I decided to, that impelled me to write this novel. It's unlike my other novels, which are fantasy novels. And it was a labor of love.
Well, did you find it different writing in fantasy instead of sci-fi, or vice versa? I mean, I think that I've always been asked by a number of folks if I've ever wanted to dip a toe into the sci-fi pool. And I think that even though the two stand next to one another, they're very adjacent to one another in terms of their readership, it's a different form of writing. And someone like you that has a tech background, obviously has the chops to make that work. Did you find it more difficult, or was it easier because you've written in sci-fi to take the leap into fantasy and vice versa?
Well, interestingly enough, I started out as a fantasy writer, and my little tech brain helped me to make the crossover into science fiction, and especially with this book. And I'm also a lifelong sailor. I grew up on sailboats and lived on mine for 3 years. I've had a lifelong interest in the sea. And a particular, that kind of tied in with my interest in Captain Nemo, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And I just felt it was time for me to sit down and write this book to make the leap from fantasy to science fiction.
Well, let's talk about that, because you take a different approach to Jules Verne here from your two other novels. What makes Captain Nemo different?
Well, we're getting in, if you read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the story is told from the perspective of Pierre Aronnax. And Captain Nemo is an unknown quantity. I wanted to get into his psychology, understand how his mind works, and then pack it.
You know, it's funny, when I was younger, I read a sci-fi series authored by Simon Hoth called the Time War series. And as you get into books 3, 4, 5-ish, it takes a turn. And he dips his toe into Jules Verne, and it's called, I think it's called the Nautilus Sanction. If memory serves me, the book, I think it's fourth or fifth out of a 9-book series. And, you know, it's a very popular book. It's something that, you know, I think that most are familiar with. And, you know, in this case, tell us about that psychology and where you place Nemo and why you chose to go down that path.
Well, Nemo starts out as a man in Captain Nemo, My Voyages, which is the full title of the book. He starts out as a man with a lot of unresolved issues. And throughout the novel, these issues are resolved. Well, actually, they don't resolve until the very end of the book. He's stubbornly resisting to resolve them until the very end. And, you know, it's basically a story of redemption, and he's not seeking redemption. In fact, just the opposite, and it's kind of thrust upon him.
You know, that's an interesting story arc, though. A lot of folks use that trope in their novel. I use it in my novels. It's something that we can all identify with. We all make mistakes. We all are looking in some form for some level of redemption, or at least a shot at coming back. It's a story of second chances. But I think it's fun when the characters are resisting that, right? You know, so I think Darth Vader's the one that we all see who comes back and makes a full circle. But some of my characters are the same way. My villain in my novels, in that case, does not seek redemption. And there's spoiler alerts there. I'll let everybody figure it out as they read through it. But that is popular. What pushed you to use that arc? Was it something that you identified with personally, or is it something you enjoyed reading? All of the above. What brought you to bake that into your novel?
Well, I think it's probably all of the above. I always wondered what would impel a man to build a submarine and to recruit 30 other men to basically live a life of celibacy, you know, in this steel tube forever. Basically commit to living in it forever and never stepping foot on land ever again. And so this book explores that. We even get glimpses into his origin. Captain Nemo's origin, we come to understand the answers to that, to the question you just asked. What impelled him to design and build the Nautilus? Where did the idea come from? How did he power it? And there is a little hint of fantasy in there as well, but I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Well, no, that's good. I mean, and look, you're a man of many talents. You play guitar. You know, you're fluent in Latin and ancient Greek, from what I understand. What I think you're telling me is you're a guy who started 3 tech firms. So you obviously are tech savvy. And, you know, I think in the same way, you know, Jules Verne was looking forward or Snowpiercer more recently. And things like that. You get that same sort of, you know, Snowpiercer is more of a dystopian future, but Jules Verne is one that has a bit of hope in it. Was your tech background, did that inform how you wrote this novel? Was it something that you felt was, because it's part of you, you could easily add it to part of this and following up on perhaps the, you know, the most famous of sci-fi novels?
Yeah, actually, my tech background definitely informed the novel. But I'd also have to say that just my lifelong love of the sea informed the novel a great deal. And if you take a look at, I mean, there's some very powerful underwater scenes that take place in the novel. And yeah, I guess I would have to say it was a combination of, you know, my tech background. I started, you know, co-founded three basic manufactured LCDs. Liquid crystal displays for industrial and medical use. And then also, a life growing up as a kid, on the water.
Well, you've written stuff. Obviously, I mentioned the Greek and the Latin background that you have, but I've also, I noticed that you wrote a couple of books that have sort of an inspiration coming out of ancient Egypt called the Cleopatra Chronicles. There's pretty two different subjects. But before I ask the question about why you made the switch, also, was it your love of the ancients and the classics that brought you to this as well? Or could you, where that, because let's face it, you've got one that's a sci-fi novel that's taking you, 20,000 leagues under the sea and then fast forwarding into the future. But you seem to delve in not just the past, but the distant past. And I find that intriguing. So I figured I'd ask and see if you pulled anything out of your studies of Latin and Greek and Egyptian, classics.
Well, I have degrees in electrical engineering and classics, and which is, of course, the study of ancient history, ancient languages, literature. Right out of university, I worked on archaeological digs for 2 years in Egypt. And the Cleopatra books are nearest and dearest to my heart, because I first decided to write those novels about 25 years ago. And I collect ancient Greek and Roman coins and Greek and Roman and Egyptian antiquities. And I always knew I was going to write a Cleopatra novel. And those two novels, they're called together, the series, the Cleopatra Chronicles. And the first book is Reluctant Goddess. And the second book is The Sword and Serpent. And both take place before Cleopatra is queen.
That's an interesting twist, because that's a part of Cleopatra that very few of us know anything about, and I find that really intriguing. Do you have a favorite character from Egyptian, Greek, Roman mythology, the classics? Do you have someone like, sounds like you're a student of it, but I also, I love the irony that you've got this logical side of your brain showing you how to be an electrical engineer, and then you've got this fantasy side pulling you in a different direction. There's a dichotomy there, which I think is pretty interesting too.
Oh, thank you. I've had a lifelong interest in ancient history. And I'd have to say my favorite character from ancient history is Cleopatra, because, I feel that her history was, I don't feel she's I think she was given short shrift in history. She was portrayed as, just being the seductress when in fact, that happened to be queen of Egypt, when in fact she was a brilliant ruler. She spoke 9 languages fluently. The Egyptian people loved her. She was Macedonian Greek, by the way. Her whole dynasty, the Ptolemies, were Macedonian Greek. And she was the first one in her dynasty that could speak to the Egyptians. In her 300-year dynasty, could speak to the Egyptians without an interpreter.
That is interesting. I had no idea. You're right. You read about her, and you get the Mark Antony, Julius Caesar, the conflict, the romance, the snake and the poison, and everything like that. And this is an interesting twist, a nice little intrigue there. So, well, I've got one last question for you. Oh, go ahead.
She was a scholar, by the way. She was a patron of the Great Library of Alexandria. In her lifetime, she was known as being a scholar. She wrote a book on medicine and another one on mathematics.
Interesting. Something that you learn a lot about by accident, and I'm taking some notes tonight. But last question here, because I only found this interesting in my research of you, so I have to ask. You have a cat named Hemlock, and when I hear Hemlock, all I think of is poison. It's an interesting name for a cat. How did you come up with that?
Well, there are two explanations, and one's quite mundane. I'm what you would describe as a gothic person. And also, circling back to my classics background, you know, Socrates was forced to drink hemlock. That was his sentence because the Athenians felt that he was corrupting their youth. So they forced him to drink hemlock.
And that's exactly what I thought of when I saw that.
And hemlock's a black cat. I just seemed like an appropriate name for him.
Good name for one. Well, that's good. So, look, we're going to the end of the show. And every time we go to the end of the show, I always have a 3 or 4 question lightning round for my guests. So are you ready to play a fun game?
Sure.
All right. So the first question out of the gate, you're invited to a lunch and it's with one other author or another poet, living or dead. Who would you want to take to lunch and why?
Charles Bukowski. I really think he captures the gut and soul of life in the 1950s and 1960s in America. I just love his style of writing. I love his stories. I've read all his work, and once I pick up one of his novels, I can't put it down until I finish reading it.
Yeah, you know they're good when that's the case, where you sit in your car squeezing out every second before you have to put your book down, or you sit near your bedpost and you wait and wait. You're like, one more chapter. So that's good. As an author, what's the best money you've ever spent that helped you out?
On an Apple computer.
Oh, there you go. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Easy one. Last question. There's a library that's on fire and you rush in to help, but you could only save one book and that book can't be one of yours. Which book is it and why do you save it?
Gosh, that's tough.
But it's designed to be fun.
I mean, there's so many that I love. I would probably want to save Peter Fraser's Ptolemaic Alexandria, because there's so few of those extant. They only did a print run of about 500 of those. It's a set of 4 books. So that would be the one I would save.
Well, that's fair. Well, look, before we let you go, tell everybody where they can find your books and what you've got next.
Well, you can buy my books on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And I understand they're available on other platforms, too. I can't recall off the top of my head which platforms those are. And what was the next question?
What's next on the agenda? What's the network in progress?
I'm working on the third and final Cleopatra novel.
That's fine. You're going to let me know when that happens, because I think I'm going to get the first two.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Jay Dharma Wyndham, thank you very much for coming on, Dharma. Seriously, it's been a pleasure. You're one of the more interesting interviews I've had a chance to do, because you're eclectic, man. You're all over the map, and it's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm looking forward to reading your stuff. And again, thank you to our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine, www.alteredrealitymag, for allowing us to continue doing our realms and to have guests on like Dharma here. Dharma, thanks again for coming on the show. My pleasure. And until next time, to all of our followers, I am J.D. Hilliard, and may your gods go with you.